This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 699, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
I'm a legionnaire, camel in disrepair, hoping for a Frigidaire to come passing by. I am on reprieve, lacking my joie de vivre, missing my gay parade in this desert dry. And I wrote my...
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 699. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I am here with Josh Flanagan.
I am also here with me and you.
I'm here with allergies, with lack of sleep. It's early again after our brief respite last week doing the show at a normal human time. And so we're back to normal for 1 week until it goes abnormal again next week. We are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks our favorite book called The Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book. It's just a device. It's just a device to start the show. That's all it is. Other books from the week, the patron pick, we'll probably do some listener mail, even though we're about to do a whole truckload of it next week. And it'll be fun. And here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be spoilers. Use the show notes. Utilize them. It's a tool. We don't do them for our health.
No. If anything. Actually, I've gotten pretty streamlined with them.
Rid of the descriptions, that's
yeah, but I used to do it all after. Like, I'd do the show. And now I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Do it concurrently. So I just take the script, I write down all the things, and then as I'm going, I note the time.
That was also a realization I came to a few years ago, which is stupid considering when you look at it. But I used to all do the whole edit and then go back to the show notes. And now I'm like, why don't I just note the time while I'm doing the edit? Mm-hmm. What's wrong with you?
It only took us over a decade to figure that out. Like, you think you're really smart and then you realize, you go, well, this was dumb. And I have been dumb for a very long time. Huh. And that is a realization of age. That's one of those things where you go, oh, I'm an idiot. I see. So other people that I think are idiots are the same as me.
Yeah, we're all idiots together. An idiot. This blue marble hurtling through space at an unreasonable speed. This week, Josh had the pick, and I think it's safe to say that everyone is surprised.
Really?
Yeah.
So
for two reasons.
Okay.
I'll tell you after you've done your little intro.
That's fine. So late last night, we record on a Friday, so Thursday night is sort of the end of the time that we have to read, make our selections. Connor, he's like, you got a pick yet? And I was like...
Well, I was going to go to bed. I wanted.
Yeah. No, no.
I wanted to send you my additions to the script before I go to bed.
It's a reasonable question. And the reason that I hadn't had a pick is because it just, like, it hadn't occurred to me. You know, like as I was reading, I didn't really have something that, and I decided to go back and look, and I was like, well, wait, what did I have fun with? And so I picked Legion of Superheroes Millennium. We can't get away from millennials. Millennium number one. And I actually, there's a couple of reasons. One, there's a lot of art in it that I liked a lot. Even the Jim Lee art was pretty good as far as Jim Lee art goes for me. And mostly, like, I found this character, Rosenthorn. I wanted to say Briar, but that's Bone.
Oh, I was going to say Fables.
That too. There's Grandma wrote, I forget. That doesn't matter. Someone will know when they write in. And I liked her. She showed up a little in, I want to say, was it Action?
Probably. She's a Superman DC person.
See, I'd never heard of her before. And I really liked the presentation of her here in this and the way that Bendis was writing her. I liked, you know, Supergirl sort of in the presidential role at the beginning. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I've never really read much Legion. I've just looked at it and say, I don't want to read that. So in a way, it's new. And it's the same thing. So the Rose Thorn thing, she's kind of new to me. And I really enjoy the storyline of her. It kind of falling apart, really. Like, she's like, I've been on these meds. I don't want to go back to how I was. Also, it turns
out. Well, that was really great. But before we get deep into that, so number one, you still really haven't read much Legion because there isn't hardly any Legion in this book.
No, and also, I recognize that too. And I think that I was I almost didn't read it. And I was expecting one thing, and then I started reading it. And at the end, I went, hey, wait, that wasn't a Legion book. And I was fine with that.
Actually, I don't think there is any Legion in this book.
There is. At the end, like, she goes into the center.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Where there's the I don't know. I kept thinking it was a robot, but I don't know if it's just a
very happy person. Dude. Yeah. That says a lot about you, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
Who is this happy robot?
That was a great scene, though.
It was a great. So the surprise here, as you mentioned, is number one, you picked a Legion of Superheroes book, which is a corner of the comics world. Traditionally, we have not spent a lot of time, especially you. And then number two is that even though there's like three stories or four stories and each one has a different art, four stories, each one is three, four, each one has a different artist. The main one is Jim Lee. And you're widely not a Jim Lee fan. Although I agree with you. I think this is some good Jim Lee here. Mm-hmm. It's mostly people just talking. There's a couple of double page action spreads, but mostly
the splash
Supergirl and Rose talking.
The splash pages are useless, but the actual ones where he does storytelling and facial acting and everything, I really like the design of President Space Girl, or Supergirl, by the way. That's great. She's got a little jacket. Like, it makes sense here. Doesn't make sense in our time, but futuristically, go for it.
Do you want to
put all the collars
haircut
on you want? Yeah, she looks good. Yeah, so there was that. And then by the time I got to the Commandy section, which was...
I hate saying it that way.
Commandy, whatever.
Commandy.
I got to his section, you know, that was drawn by, Andreas Sorrentino, who just was like, I'm going to Kirby this motherfucker out. And I was like, oh, that's really cool and fun. And then the final
Kirby brow.
Yeah, no, it was straight up like, it was good. It was like homage, but not imitation.
Yes.
I think it was just using those figures and it's still recognizable as Andrea Sorrentino, who I believe we both believe is quite talented.
Yes,
and then
yes.
That last bit, I don't know. I liked the whole bit with Batman Beyond guy and that conversation. I liked the Commandy stuff. There's that sequence where she cuts the dude's head off. That was a great sequence. Just page turn on it. I don't know. And then the stuff, you know, in the future where, you know, she's at the desk and she's trying to get attention and he's really nice. He likes her. He's like, I know this is going to be, but I like you. I really appreciate you. And, you know, it turns into a little chase sequence. I thought that was really drawn well.
Well, Andre Lima Araujo is terrific also.
And he's come up a bunch recently.
So the future of DC is confusing. We'll just say it, confusing. Like, there's a lot of different stories that take place in the future. There's a Legion of Superheroes. There's Commandy. There's Batman Beyond. And as far as I've been aware, they've mostly been separate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know how it falls in a timeline. The Legion, I would assume, is after Commandy, but he's the last boy on Earth. I don't know. But here, I guess there's an attempt to make sense of it using the character of Rosenthorn, who is revealed to be some sort of immortal.
Polish. Yeah.
And as you mentioned briefly before I cut you off, I really like the idea that her specific medication that keeps her sane and therefore not turning into the psychopathic Thorn, she's basically Jekyll and Hyde, is no longer available because they're able to fix that genetic mutation in birth or in the vitro. So why make the medicine? So she, but she's immortal and she only has a little bit of it left. And that was an interesting sort of ticking clock. You know, it's like it's like a bomb waiting to go off. So when is she going to turn into Thorn again? That was fun.
That's one of a lot of really fun little sci-fi ideas that were in here. And again, like it feels like a broken record, but you know, Bendis keeps doing things that I feel like he couldn't figure out how to fit into his Marvel work. Mm-hmm. And so you're seeing new things out of the guy, and it's really refreshing because you're like, oh yeah, we loved this dude's work for a long time. And this move to DC has been like the best thing that's happened for him creatively in forever.
Yep.
And this is like just more of that, but it doesn't, we've always talked, like you can tell it's a Bendis book. It's just like I was talking about with the art. You can tell it's a Bendis book, but you can see the also, oh, he's giving us something else. He's stretching out. He's changing things around. And it's really, it's fun.
Yeah. So she opens with explaining her situation to President Supergirl, who is as fun to say as President Captain America was a couple of years ago. And then explains her mental health predicament. And then we flash back to her in Batman Beyond world, where she meets Batman Beyond and has a very confusing conversation with him because she doesn't know who he is. And she thinks he's the original Batman who's immortal like her, but he's not. Then flashes back to Commandy, which would assume that Commandy is before Batman Beyond, which doesn't make any sense because Bruce Wayne's still alive in Batman Beyond world. And then flashes back further to the Legion world. It's just, I think I might be taking the and thens too literally, which is the device to open each chapter.
You're paying more attention to it than I am. I was just going for the ride, and I'm like, oh, this is fun. You want to make sense of it, which is a fair point. I just
because I've never really seen all these future worlds together in one story. So, and I never really, you know, make your own continuity thing. I've never really thought too hard about putting them into a timeline because you can't. But when they're put together like this, I'm like, wait, this is a lot of really disparate, you know, future looks at DC, and I don't know how they fit together. And it may not ultimately be important, and ultimately it's not that big a deal. I just never seen, you know, it all put together in one place. I'm sure I could look it up and see where it all falls, but it doesn't really matter ultimately. She's an interesting character, and I'm really interested to see now where it goes with issue two, and then I assume leading into a Legion series. That's what I assume is going to happen, because this is just a two-issue miniseries. But, if anyone can get me to read Legion, it would be Bendis. And we have talked about that at DC. He's only really done, other than Event Leviathan's, you know, single character books. Mm-hmm. So this is a guy who made his bones doing big team books. And so maybe Legion will be right up his alley. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll see. We'll
find out. Yeah, traditionally Legion has been done by guys like Paul Levitz and Keith Mark Waid did it for a bit. And, you know, Mark Waid's real good, but they are traditionalists.
And deep divers.
Yes, that too. That's definitely the case. You know, like, we know the DC history and we're going to stick it all in here. And I know that Bendis knows quite a lot of it too, but I feel like he's going to break that mold a little bit and bring something of what I like to something which I have traditionally not connected with. And that can be interesting. You know, the thing about this to me was that, you know, I know these properties, but I don't know a lot about them, you know, so it was fun. It was like, oh good, there's a new corner that we can shine a light on. It's like finding a little era of music that you hadn't listened to, but you know, you'd heard of and you really liked it, you know, so.
It's true. I mean, the chances that you're going to be like, become like a huge Legion fan and go back and read all the books are really low, but at least it's a very plentiful and fertile area of comics that neither one of us, I've hardly read any Legion comics, so that's as exciting for me too. I mean, I like them as a concept. I like them when they show up in a story I'm reading, and I liked those, you know, Geoff Johns, you know, Action Comics Legion stories, and I like them when they show up in an event because usually, you know, shit's going down, but or they show up to go, it's all okay, and they leave. But I don't really know much about them, so it'll be fun to sort of, you know, dip into this for a bit, I think.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. And, you know, in that way, I don't find the pick terribly surprising in that,
It was a fun comic. And then, you know, the other side of it being like, there were a lot of good books. There were a lot of things that I wanted to talk about this week, but there wasn't really anything that I was like, this was amazing. It stood up. Mm-hmm. There was always like, that was pretty good. Wasn't the best. And at the end of it, I think the novelty of this for me was attractive. Because, you know, we read a lot of comics. So when there's anything that gives you a special feeling, you note it down.
I mean, I didn't make an official pick in my head for myself. There were a lot of interesting books to talk about. I really enjoyed Fantastic Four 14, Dan Slott, Paco Medina, The Start of a New Arc. If you have been, you know, thinking about jumping on a Fantastic Four, this would be a great place to do it. I thought this was terrific. And I've been saying that, much like his run on Silver Surfer, I think this is the perfect corner of the Marvel Universe for Dan Slott's type of writing to live.
I mean, this is the only Dan Slott thing that I have ever read and enjoyed and have stuck with for 14 issues. Mm-hmm. And that says something. So if you're at all like me and you've been like, and you've really wanted to read a Fantastic Four, this works. You know, mm-hmm. you're right. Like, he's a great fit. The art has been really good throughout. It's not just been sort of one person, but like the Paco Medina art in this was super fun. Somebody on the Instagram said it sort of had a Mike Ringo feel. And I was like, oh, mm-hmm. it does. That's a really good one. And then this issue, this was probably my runner up.
Yeah, for sure.
And
this is quintessential Fantastic Four.
Totally. And also they're just saying, you know what? Forget the kids. Forget everything. We're going to build our... I liked that there was a couple of choices in here that don't necessarily make sense, but I loved them, which mm-hmm. was one, all the early Fantastic Four stuff appeared to take place in the early 60s.
Well, that was the only thing I cocked my eyebrow while reading was the flashback to them in college.
Mm-hmm. Wanted it. I was fine with it. I was like, it doesn't make sense. I don't care. That's where I want to see
them. No, I'm fine with the fashions. Mm-hmm. It's just Reed shouldn't have the great temples in college. Mm-hmm. And Sue, even though she had the Jackie Kennedy haircut, they made her face look older, mm-hmm. which was weird considering she looks so young in, you know, the rest of the story. So I just thought it was a strange choice to make her and Reed appear like they were old in college, and then we flash to them now and they look younger than they did in the flashback. It's just a strange art choice. That was the only, and that's literally two panels in this whole book. It was the only time I was like, oh, that's weird. But otherwise, it's a terrific story of Reed rebuilding the original rocket that they flew to space, and then, you know, deciding they had to complete that mission because they never completed it because they got zapped by the cosmic rays and turned into Fantastic Four. So they're rebuilding a better version that has the proper shielding this time. And are going to go into space. And I also love the beginning where they're opening the Fantastic Four exhibit, the Aerospace Museum mm-hmm. in D.C. That was a nice touch.
Yeah, and Reed was sort of like, huh, he's just looking at his rocket. And I liked how it was a neo-futuristic space-age rocket design. It wasn't redesigned for – they just were like, this is what the Fantastic Four is, and we're going to do it this way. You know, and then you had sort of the classic – Ben Grimm, you know, is like, I'm not doing that again. Because he's, you know, it went bad for him the first time.
Yeah.
There's just lots of little touches in here that were really fun. You know, Sue wakes up and Reed is on the bed and he's, you know, his mind's going. He can't not do it. It was a lot of that. And then Ben, you know, on the other side being like, oh, you made a special chair for me. And feeling the warm fuzzies and like having to be reminded for the thousandth time, like, no, they care about him and love him. You know, and he's still got that splint on his arm from the Hulk fight that he had to go through. Yeah. I love that they did a rocket launch in lower Manhattan.
They're going to blow out a lot of windows. I love little things like Reed and Johnny building it without their superpowers, you know, like they did originally. And
yeah.
That was, you know, just little touches. It was funny in the beginning when we open in there, the Air and Space Museum, and there's a tour going through, and they walk up to the Fantastic Four family unveiling their exhibit. There's like nobody around. Like, who were they? Were they just standing there waiting for people to show up?
It's just a lot of book signings.
But it's just like there was no crowd. There was no like media. It was just like they were just waiting for this tour group to show up. But I love the idea that Reed is an engineer who just loves his ship. Like the beautiful lines, you know, he's just sort of like, he loves that ship. It's his first one.
Well,
that was a really great.
I was just watching, I'm still going through From the Earth to the Moon again. There's an episode, I think it's episode 6, where I can't remember the actor's name. It's a character actor. You'd be like, oh, I totally recognize that guy. He's in charge of the team that builds the lunar module. It's a really great episode, and it's all about sort of the people who are making the thing, and they're on a deadline, and things don't go well, and whatever. And then they finally get a workable model, and they you know, pick it up, and they're, you know, like the machines are taking it, you know, down to where it's going to get added onto the rocket. And the guy just sort of stands there and watches it go away, you know, and so, mm-hmm. man, we got to get going. The other guy's like, he's never going to see it again because it's going to go up into space and it's going to stay there. You know, and he gave 7 years of his life to it. I had just watched that, and that dovetailed really nicely with sort of this bit. And, you know, it's the same thing. It's the space race. It's, you know, 1968. No, that was 9 actually, but you know, same period of time, that sort of Cold War, you know, space race. Yeah. The Fantastic Four comes from.
The Fantastic Four predated it. I mean, you're talking about the early 60s.
I mean, like, it still was born out of the
yeah, but it's just interesting that they, you know, mm-hmm. that was, I mean, they declared it early. Kennedy declared the space race early than the book, but the actual race didn't finish till later.
No.
I wonder if the flashback, the part where Ben presses the button, he can hear the cockpit recorder in the exhibit. I wonder if that's all the original dialogue, because I Fantastic Four omnibus is not handy.
Has to be. I was thinking as I read it, I was like, this must be, which is great. That was a really powerful page.
Yeah.
You know, if I have any criticism, I think it is that Alicia is a little too one-sided, supportive, do whatever you want, I'm here for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like the 1950s astronaut wife Life magazine sort of portrait where... You know, but I don't know that doesn't fit. But it's to have her character featured so heavily, and her only role is to support this other guy.
But on the other hand, she's ahead of Ben. Like, she knows he's going before he knows he's mm-hmm. going. Like, she's already making the sandwiches and the coffee in the thermos for him before he's decided to go. That's right, how well she knows him.
That's true, but she has no purpose of her own other than to support him. It's unrealistic, I guess. I don't know. Unrealistic is a stupid thing to say about the Fantastic Four, but she's a very, very featured character, and she has no personality.
When I was gone, Lois Lane number 2 came out, so I read 2 and 3 back to back this week. I love this book.
It's grown on me. The first issue I wasn't sure about. This one, there were a lot of really great things about it. The standout for me, and if it wasn't for the whole thing, I think maybe the best scene of the week was Lois Lane walking down the street and talking and, you know, starting a fight with her husband while he was not there. And Renee is like, what the hell's going on? And then how they have that discussion that doesn't turn into a fight, which is also an interesting choice. That little bit was a really wonderful bit of comic book writing. And that's... In contrast to Alicia, who I was just talking about, you've got Lois Lane, who does have her own needs and agenda, and the story of their relationship is that they have to, you know, work with that. And Clark is always learning on how to deal with her, even though he's super powerful. And I like that.
Okay. And he wants to protect her, even though she may not always need it. She needs it sometimes, but not always. And here he blows it trying to protect her because in the last issue, someone got a photo of them kissing. So now everyone thinks they're having an affair, and that's, you know. I just think this is great. It's been a while since I read number one. The overall story is Lois is investigating the death of a Russian journalist. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And she's using Renee Montoya as the question to help. And in this issue, the original question shows up and she's like, you were dead. And I was like, I thought you were dead. So that was a fun. I love the question in both incarnations. So that was a fun matchup. And then that's part of the mystery of the story. And I love the Perry, even though Perry's not in this one, he was in the second one a lot. I love her, Lois and Perry. Their relationship is terrific. The Mike Perkins art is just weird enough to work. Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit of what's his name? The guy who drew Identity Crisis.
Rags Morales.
Rags Morales in him on some of the facial stuff and mm-hmm. But it's also very classic in some cases. It's just weird enough to make it the book interesting, mm-hmm. in that way. I like this a lot. I think this is great. It's a totally opposite of Jimmy Olsen, the other maxi series going on, Superman. deadly serious.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's sort of Greg Rucka stuff that, you know, I really did like that scene with the two questions. This is awkward.
But then she runs up and gives him a giant hug, which I loved.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Which was to say, you know, the same thing where you thought Lois and Clark were going to have a long fight, you know, and it wasn't. Which is, right. You know, that's how a good relationship should work.
Yeah.
So I liked that. It was good.
Deceased, a good way to good day to die, number one, which is the one shot. It's a one shot, right? A one shot coming out of the deceased miniseries, which I think caught DC by surprise. Because apparently it's a big hit.
Good.
I don't pay attention to these things, but apparently it's a big hit. And so this is a side story where we spend some time with some of the characters that aren't in the main story, mostly Mr.'s Miracle and Terrific, Big Barda, Blue Beetle, Booster Gold.
And John Constantine.
John Constantine, that's right. And the John Constantine part's drawn by Derek Robinson, which was terrific. What did you think of this issue?
I liked it a lot, mostly, but my big not-like part of it.
I bet you it's the same thing I didn't like.
Okay, well, let's find out. When Barda and Scott are on pages, they're aping the Mitch and Tom book.
Yes, yes.
And I thought that was...
Don't do that.
So recent. Like, it is a very specific thing for a very specific book. And honestly, Tom Taylor has enough style on his own that he does not need to do that. And I thought that was
the worst thing you can do is turn Mr. Miracle and Big Barda into Hawkeye, in which very specific book then totally changes the character forever. Every scene with them is 9-panel grids, and then Mr. Terrific comes over and Scott brings him in a veggie plate. And it's like, don't do this.
Yeah.
Don't do this.
Yeah. That really, I'm glad you had that reaction too.
Yeah.
Other than that,
I just think they're great characters that have been around forever. They don't need to be defined by this one terrific story. As great as it was, they still are viable on their own in a different style.
Yes, and you can also have that other book inform how you're writing them, but don't put it completely in that other style. You don't have to make a joke. If all that Scott Free ever does is show up and you know, make a reference to a veggie tray, I will never read that character again. Because it will only remind me that this is not that thing, and I don't want this to be that thing.
You have to let it exist on its own. He's one of my favorite characters. He's always been, because he was in that Keith Given Justice League book.
Yeah,
that's how I really came to know him as a kid. And so I just don't want him to turn into this one-note joke that's constantly just referencing back this other book.
Which he was not even close to a one-note thing. Anyway, I'm going to leave that behind, because one of the other things that does happen in here is that I don't know who Laura Braga is. Her pages are pretty good. It's good looking stuff. I definitely had her Mr. Miracle influenced by the Nick Darrington covers, I think, to a certain extent. Yeah. And Mitch's stuff, but more like that. Then you cut over to Derek Robertson, who is beautiful. You know, like really good Derek Robertson, drawing a really good Constantine. And I got very excited. That first page where he's running down the road, and it's in Liverpool, by the way, which is brilliant, because that's where he's from. He is not from London, and nobody ever seems to get that right except for not Americans. You know, he's running from the zombies, and he's scared. And if he's scared, if you see a dude running, that's not good. And if he's running, that's really not good. And then the next page is, you know, he jumps into the black cab, and I know, because I'm a longtime Constantine reader, that's Chaz's cab. And he looks down on the seat, and he sees his bloody, and you see the phone screen going, and you know what that means. And that is all. That's heartbreaking. And he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry," you know. And he burns him up. That was like, and that's the thing we've talked about all through this deceased thing, is that he keeps putting in these moments of heart that really work for these characters because he understands them. And you know, it was good. You know, all that stuff was great. The Constantine saying, you know, like, listen, we've lost, it's over. And then you're like, wow, he's really given up. That's pretty bad. And then he does the heroic return. And with him, you don't know what he's going to do. Like, it makes sense to me that he would give up finally. You know, but he didn't, you know, and then there's the time travel stuff and all this. There's a lot of really fun things in here. I liked it. Well, like, I liked the other
ones. It's interesting because it almost seems like this is a major plot point, because the magic heroes are, you know, sort of have a plan to save the day, but this is a one-shot special. So will that show up in the other book or not? I don't know. But, like, you know, Constantine and Dr. Fate and Zatanna seem to have a plan. Or it may not. It may just be that, you know, a plan to survive. But I liked it despite my really big reservations about how Mr. Miracle and Big Barda were portrayed. I mean, I was really not happy with that at all.
You know, again, there's another relations thing where they Booster realizes he doesn't exist anymore, and he does a Marty McFly brother. You know, and he disappears, and Scott's, you know, or sorry, Ted's court is, you know, is left to be, you know, sad without his friend. They keep doing this in this book, and it works every time because he keeps finding people who have relationships that matter. It was Hal and Ollie
and Dinah.
And Constantine and Chaz and Booster Gold and Blue Beetle and, you know, Robin and Batman with Alfred and that other scene. Like, there's a lot of that, and it works. And he's not overdoing it. It's just like, here's the scene. Move along. This is what would happen in the zombie apocalypse. I'm talking a lot. I'm sorry.
No, you were absolutely right. Doomsday Clock continues to make me sad for Geoff Johns.
The greatest comic book writer in the world who doesn't seem to have a home in it.
Yeah, and I mean, clearly he had a plan for this book. Because when he started, we talked about this to death, but when he started writing the book and doing the book, he was in charge of creative at DC. He's no longer in charge of that. Mm-hmm. So clearly he had a plan. And this was the issue, you could argue it came way too late, and I think it did. But this is the issue where it really starts to dovetail with the DCU at the time he started doing this. There's a scene here that directly overlaps with DC Rebirth, where Wally and Barry are reunited. This is where you really start to see, oh, this was his plan from Rebirth to Doomsday Clock, was to get to this point. There's a lot of talk about, you know, the timelines being wrong and the lives being wrong. And, you know, this is what we all thought we were going from that point of Rebirth. And then clearly people in charge of DC jettisoned Johns and decided to go a different way. So it makes me sad that this is where we all thought we were getting. It took way too long to get there. It's almost irrelevant at this point, and they keep paying lip service to it in the press. Again, you shouldn't believe most of what is said in the comics press in terms of interviews, but if you're talking about this kind of thing. But, you know, oh, yeah, no, we still definitely consider Doomsday Clock part of it. No, you don't. No one does. It just makes me sad to read it, because this is clearly what the plan was, and I like this plan better than what they're doing otherwise. And so it's a bummer. It's a bummer. And now, however, also, it's a weird book. It's a very weird book.
It's been really,
I kind of like it.
It's been really good for the last few issues.
Yeah. Once we got beyond the first couple, where we got past that weird, you know, mime and.
Work stuff. It's the same thing. When I first read Watchmen, I was younger, but, you know, like, for a little while, I was like, I don't know what the hell I'm reading here. And then as it coalesces, you know, and then it builds and it gets that momentum thing going, he mimicked that structure here, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can go back now and I can read the beginning part of Watchmen and I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I totally get what this is. I know. But the first time I read it, I was completely lost. Mm-hmm. You know, but I had the benefit of also having it in a book. You know, I didn't have to wait 5 months or whatever it is, you know, that it takes between these issues. Because it, like, all the things are starting to make sense now. You know sort of who the mind people are and why they matter. And you know the Rorschach kid and what his deal is. Wasted pancakes, which is unfortunate. Yeah. But, you know, I don't really want this to be continuity, you know, in a way. Like, I don't – I like it as an Elseworlds in a way now.
Well, that's what it is now.
Yeah, no, and I'm fine with that because – I mean, I don't like, because if it was the real deal, it would fundamentally alter sort of the fabric of the DC universe and you know, who Superman is and blah, blah. I don't want that. Like, I like this as a thing by a guy who knows these DC characters better than, you know, any sort of contemporary, not any, but, you know, as well as any contemporary comic book writer. Mm-hmm. And on a sort of, I want to say, like, on a emotional level or he knows thematically what they are and what they should be, and you can see that throughout here. I love the Superman in this and the sort of controversy that arose around it, and he put Superman in a situation where, like, he had to do the right thing but everybody would hate him for it. That's a great Superman concept that doesn't happen.
And that's Superman.
Yeah,
he'll always do the right thing. I think this is incredibly interesting and and fun and wacky, and not in like a goopy way, but like it's just strange. And I'm really looking forward to sitting down and reading it all through. My reservations about the beginnings aside now, once I'll know the score, and also my reservations about its place in the DC universe, which is nothing. So now once that happens, you just put a big old mental Elseworld stamp on the front and you read it.
And as a, you know, as a Watchmen fan, I take no offense or have no reservations about this. And I know that that was a really big thing with Before Watchmen. And it's the same thing. If those books had been really, really good, or if they'd all been as good as Darwin's book or the book that Darwin did with Amanda Connor.
Yep.
If they'd all been that good, then it would have been a lot harder to write them off. But most of them ended up being sort of forgettable.
Yep.
And that's explaining what happened before Watchmen, which is more dangerous than explaining what happens after Watchmen, because you can always drop the after if you don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, you got a TV show coming out doing the same thing. It's all just stories. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is really high quality craft, and that's all that matters to me.
You know what? I bet Alfred makes fucking amazing pancakes. And to just throw them away.
I bet they're a little more refined than we're used to. So I bet, like, at first you wouldn't be like, oh man, that is immediately satisfying. You'd eat them and it'd be pretty good. His syrup is amazing. He gets really good syrup, clearly.
He has the
and
best. He knows syrup. How to, all the best syrups.
All the best syrups. But, like afterwards you'd be thinking about them. You're like, I don't know.
Well, he made at least 10 of them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I mean, that's a lot of pancakes. And that guy just threw them away. I mean, I would love a pancake right now.
Pancakes are so good.
Gary Frank's doing terrific work here. I realize he's part of the problem with the delay, but it's worth the wait. He's one of my favorites. He's hardly ever doing anything because he's doing stuff like this, but it's great. He's a little claustrophobic with the 9-panel grids with his work, but that's okay.
That's the job. That's this job.
Yeah. And, you know, that's also part of the reason why it's so slow. I mean, people need to realize is, you know, he's doing 9 separate drawings per page on most pages. That's a lot of drawing. It may not make sense, like, but if it's a bigger panel, you just do one drawing for that panel. So he's doing 9 different, you know, things. It's a lot of work.
And if you flip through this, there's no half-assing, just like Dave Gibbons, you know, didn't. You know, there's, like, everything is as full of whatever it needs to be full of. There's no cheating.
So in 2021, we'll get the final issue and we'll be able to figure out if this all worked or not. I don't know when the final issue is supposed to come out.
So there's one. I mean, obviously there's 12 because it's like
one more. Let's take a quick break. Talk about how you can help iFanboy. Many people do. That's how we keep the show going. We do appreciate that. You guys are the backbone. You guys are the spine. You guys are the foundation. What other words can we use to describe them? The heart? The soul?
I mean, in a lot of ways, you are iFanboy.
We are all iFanboy. And we were all iFanboy. The main way to do that, patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go. Become a patron of the show. We thank you. We've hit a new high number of patrons, and we are getting ever closer to the next stretch goal, which is a monthly non-comics media podcast that Josh and I or some form of our extended family of friends will do to talk about non-comics media once a month. Also, in addition to that, we will also upload all of our mini and full-length video shows that are missing from our YouTube channel. We'll re-embed them on the site, too. You'll be able to watch all those old shows from more than 10 years ago, 12 years ago. You get to see us younger, thinner, happier.
Wearing shorts.
Inappropriately wearing shorts on a TV show.
Who's like, man, I'd like to see Josh's knees. Well, I got good news for you, buddy. I can tell you right where to go to make that happen.
Have you ever wondered about Josh's calves? Well, look no further. There's a lot of shows. A lot of them are missing.
They're one of my best features.
So if you want to see that stretch goal get hit, patreon.com/iFanboy. We're only a couple $100 away, so only a handful of you need to join up to do that. And then check that out there. Also, we got our t-shirt store, iFanboy.threadless.com. The shirts we've got, iFanboy logo, Herm, related to Doomsday Clock. Particularly podcast ratings.
It is no such thing.
If one is electro, I'm just saying it's related sort of, you know, thematically.
Spiritually.
Color-wise.
Sure.
If one is electro, GDAT, and the shirt that is of our time and is eternal and still our top seller, Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters. We had a new design. It was Comic-Con specific. We didn't get it out for Comic-Con, so we're going to push it to next year. So we'll have to come up with another shirt design that is more evergreen. But we had one that was specific for Comic-Con, and we wanted to get that out before Comic-Con for all those people going to Comic-Con. However, we did not make it in time for various reasons. So
I also just – I don't think we can beat the last one. I just
listen, we all just need to understand it's going to be a letdown from the last shirt. It's going to be a letdown.
100%.
So we'll move on. We'll get another shirt out for it this year. That is my pledge to you. FMO.com/support. That's where you can help us out directly via PayPal. If you don't want to be a patron, if you don't want to buy a t-shirt, totally cool. FMO.com/Amazon. That's where you can find the links to buy the books we talk about on our Booksplode show, as well as a general link to Amazon. And also, there's always links in our Pick of the Week show. If you want to check out the book we talked about and you didn't check it out, you've got like a Comixology account, you can check it out through the podcast page. So you can check all those things out and help the show going. We do appreciate it. We just paid a bunch of bills. Our yearly hosting bill just came in, which was a shocker. So we thank everyone who does that because you really do keep the show going. What is this bill? Oh, so that's what happened in my head earlier this week. So
yeah, really, I had a similar experience, and I went, the patron pick is how much?
So anyway, that's how the show keeps going. We wouldn't do it without you guys. So thank you very much.
Shall we continue?
Yes.
I read Agents of Atlas number 2. I had not necessarily planned to continue with it, but I thought I'd give it one more shot. My favorite part of the last one was sort of the Jeff Parker part with the sort of other Agents of Atlas.
But I remember you talking about it with Ryan. Yeah, that was you and Ryan. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I believe so. And this one just was the straight up Craig Pak writing with Nico Leon and Pop Mon, who an artist I really like, who I don't see a lot.
Yep.
There's a guy and he's got a startup, and the idea is that for $1,000 a month or a day, I don't know, it's a lot of money, you can sort of be part of this, you know, global country that you can sort of pan, like a pan-Asian thing where you can sort of pass between all the mm-hmm. countries and there's no borders. And he's, you know, slimy and despicable.
Like X-Men.
Yeah. He's slimy and despicable. And I think in this one, the characterization of the different people came out a lot more. I really enjoyed, you know, the Amadeus Cho scenes. I think that he's now turned in, he's been around a long time, and I know I haven't read a lot of it, yep. but he was a character who's kind of interesting and cool and fun here. And he's been developed for a while. It was just kind of fun. It wasn't like great, but I enjoyed reading it. And I was kind of surprised.
You're sticking with
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I am for now, for sure, until I get bored of it.
I think this is my last issue of Sea of Stars.
Oh, wow.
Sea of Stars number 3. Yeah, I just don't care.
It was my favorite of them.
That's fine. We are all of different opinions here.
Yeah, it's true. I think that the problem that the book has right now is that when you read it, it's really beautiful and there's some nice moments, but I don't feel like there's a lot of forward momentum of a plot that's happening, which mm-hmm. isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just, it's a pacing thing. I like a lot of what's happening. But now that we've set up these two things, we have to get the dad and the son moving in some direction right now.
I just feel like the first three issues were almost exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And this is what you're saying, but also in terms of like the character, like, you know, okay, they get it. The son is goofing off in space. The dad's trying to survive. And it's been the same story for three issues.
I am curious what's going to happen with the kid. Like, I want to know what that's about. If he's going to sort of, like, is he infected by another alien or is this something or other? Also, I like the idea that apparently at the end here, Jason Aaron, not satisfied with giant galactic sharks, has said, yeah, but what about a bigger shark?
Well, you get the megalodons. But, I mean, the other thing is I don't hear a lot of Jason Aaron. I hear mostly Dennis Hallam, and I've never really been a big fan of his. So
I'm a big fan of his.
I get the Jason Aaron is co-plotting this and Hallam is,
I thought they were scripting the different, I thought one of them took the dad, one of them took
it
the
could,
kid.
It could be, but I don't know. It just doesn't feel very Jason Aaron-y to me.
Well, yeah.
But it could be.
And that way I would say I
like the dad part way more than I like the kid part.
Mm-hmm.
I like the dad struggle. Because There's also stakes for the dad when the kid's basically indestructible. So every time he faces a new challenge, it's like, well, it's not going to hurt him. So.
Well, yeah, but there's something to, you know, it's like, you know, something's coming. I'm expecting the worst with that, but that's what I like. That's what I, anyway, I see where you're coming from. I'm not
mad at you.
That's cool. I'm all right. That's too bad, man.
So people may not know, or may know, it depends on when you came around, is that back when we had our old t-shirts, before the current run of t-shirts, we had a bunch of creator-specific shirts. We had a Fear Agent shirt that Jerome Pena drew for us, and we had a shirt from Mike Norton called Battle Pug, and we were not credited in the back of this book, Josh, as helping to create Battle Pug.
I was trying not to lead with that. I wanted to stay on a good bit there. To be fair, this is Mike's thing. He did all the work. We just had a little blip in that, and I thought,
oh, well, he thanked all these people at the end, and I was like, okay, wait for us, because we helped. It was our shirt that created the concept of Battle Pug, and nothing. Mm-hmm. So Battle Pug number one from Image Comics. Mike Norton is the writer and artist.
Yep.
I guess. Yes. It doesn't really say what everybody does.
Alan Pasalacqua does the colors, and Crank does the letters, so Mike is writing and drawing
it. I can't really tell you the linear timeline on this, because I think it was Ron who worked with him on, yes, Battle Pug, the t-shirt, but we went to him to see if he wanted to make a t-shirt with us. I think he came back with the Battle Pug idea, or didn't Ron say put the guy on the pug or something? So the idea of this Conan the Barbarian character, which is basically what this is, riding a giant pug through his version of the
Hyboria
is where this went. Mike took the idea. He loved the idea, and he went and made a webcomic out of it. He won a bunch of awards for it. He won an Eisner for it, including a Harvey and a bunch of things. And so now here it is in comic form, and, you know, I enjoyed it, but it was a little heavy-handed.
I thought it was fun. The thing that I'm keeping in mind, so basically he does a little Trump-Putin bit in here. And yeah, but have you, like, I've read every one of his Lil Donnie strips, and I like Mike. I like his. That's the best work he's ever done. It's super funny. It's super incisive. It's just a side of him I didn't know existed, and I've always been impressed by that. So if he wants to do political humor in here, you know, and make it big and silly and crazy, I think that he's absolutely earned that right. You know, a lot of people who do that, you know, it's like, oh, they're not qualified. He is. Like, he's his political, and like, he was so good at it that, like, he's like, I gotta walk away. I can't think about this all the time. And I was like, I understand that as well. You know, I actually hadn't read most of this stuff in the webcomic that had come out before.
I hadn't read it either.
So to me, I was like, I was excited to have it in the form so I could sort of get into it. Because I don't read webcomics, you know. And then the book comes out, and I sort of go, oh, I should read that at some point. And then I don't. I liked it. I had fun with it. I do like the contrast of the fact, you know, Mike's a pug guy. That's the whole reason. Like, he's got his two pugs, Mo and Ninja, who are both aging. You got them a little earlier than I got my dog. And I remember when my dog was a puppy, talking to him at one of the cons, and be like, how do I deal with this? And we chatted about it. I always remember that. And, he, you know, he loves those dogs, you know, and it's sort of in here where you've got all this really super serious looking, you know, Conan guy. And then the pug is this ridiculous thing, this contrast of that stupid looking face. Yep. So I had fun with it. It's good. I'm going to keep reading this.
I dropped off Usagi Yojimbo.
Yeah.
I think because of the colors. I don't like the colors.
Yeah, this was the best issue.
Okay.
I really dug this issue. There's basically, it starts off with what is like this big zombie fight. And I was like, what happened? What am I missing? And then we sort of cut to Usagi and this woman, Lady Mara, on a hill. And she's reading him stories that she wrote. And he just really likes, and he's like, you're really talented. And you know, she tells her story, and she's married to this, you know, samurai who's kind of an asshole, but now she's going off on a journey. And he's like, you know, let me come and hang out with you. And it's so, like, sweet. There's no underlying, like, they're going to have an affair. There's nothing like that. He just really likes her talent, and he's upset that sort of she doesn't get a chance to do it because of the place and the time that they live. It's very, you know, like a classic sort of Usagi Yojimbo story. And I, you know, I got used to the colors. His cartooning is all still there. I don't think I liked that story in the first three very much. So this was a little more sort of my speed, with that. I really dug it though. It was good. I'm glad I kept reading it.
I wanted to mention Superman Up in the Sky number 3. This continues to be terrific. Tom King, Adam Kubert. This features two stories, which I love them both. One, the first one was Superman's impotence in the face of this galactic sort of bureaucracy, where he's trying to make an intergalactic phone call to Lois. So he's at this place where you make galactic phone calls, and it's sort of like the cross from the DMV and a
Brazil
weird phone. Yeah, and he's got his number.
The movie, not the country.
They're gonna call his number so he can make his phone call, and he just, all his power in the world, he can't do anything about it. He's got to wait there next to a Dominator and a guy with three heads, and he spends the entire time, because he's waiting to talk to Lois, he spends the entire time imagining ways she could be in trouble that he can't help with. And I thought that was really, really strong and powerful, and also really funny whenever he had to deal with the bureaucrats. And then something happens, and he goes off and ends up, I guess, in a wormhole, which shoots him back in time to World War II, where Sergeant Rock finds him on the battlefield. And so he has a little World War II adventure. And I have a feeling this is just sort of Tom King doing – this book is like his vessel to just play around in the DC universe.
Well, and also, and so, you know, it's not completely unknown that Tom King's aesthetic overlaps quite a bit with ours. He's, you know, sort of the same kind of reader, same generation. And so when he does this, I was like – basically the Sergeant Rock, I was like, fuck yeah. that's my review of that section of this. Like, the one side is like suburban existential ennui. The second one is Sergeant Rock, and I was like, you got my vote, Tom.
So, you know, I love that, you know, he wakes up with amnesia, so they give him a uniform and somehow glasses, so he's basically Clark Kent in the battlefield, and then a grenade blows up and he realizes he's indestructible and gets his memories back.
And also helps. You can't underestimate the fact that it's Andy Kubert drawing Sergeant Rock. You know, his dad drew
his father.
Those war comics. You know, and I was like, that's there's no way that doesn't mean something to that artist. And I think that mm-hmm. that came through in the work. It was good.
A bunch of funny book malarkey. I love that issue. I love this. It's a great issue. So those are the books we're going to talk about. But there's also the patron pick, patreon.com/ifanboy, where every patron can vote to add a book to the rundown, no matter what level you give. And this week, the overwhelming favorite was Spawn 300 from Image Comics. And this was a long issue. It was 70 plus pages on the digital reader. And before Josh, I'm sure you have very strong opinions. I did think this was interesting to read because when Image launched and Spawn came out, I was 14, and in the perfect demo for these comics. I loved Spawn.
Yeah, that was my question. Like, you were definitely reading Spawn. Like, how long did you stick with it?
Longer than I remember. I remember at some point going back and finding way more Spawn comics than I thought, mm-hmm. but. I read all of them. I was Youngblood, Spawn, Savage Dragon, Wildcats.
Like, would you say Shadowhawk, you got I was in. To 100 issues?
No. But
seven.
A couple of years. A couple of years for uh-huh. sure. I still think those beginning Spawn issues were really fun and interesting and good. And I've always been a fan of McFarlane's. He's got wonky anatomy. He's got other wonkiness to his art. But there's something sort of pure about it. He's self-taught, you know. He's not necessarily technically correct, but he's got a lot of
at the end, and it's great to read it in his voice, which I actually can't do him, so that's not going to be this. Yeah. But he basically like says something like, you know, when I was 16, I decided to make this my career, so I taught myself how to draw. At the age of 16, I decided to train myself and learn the style of comic book drawing, pursue it as a career.
I
did this myself. What are you going to do?
And so I actually... Like, I didn't think this was good because it was a culmination of 300 issues and I haven't been reading them, so I didn't really follow a lot of it. But I actually enjoyed reading it in a perverse way, and I thought the opening with story, little vignette about the two kids and the disaffected teens, who, and you think they've murdered their family, but it's actually this little girl. I thought that was a really strong opening. Actually, this is interesting. This is good. And then it sort of very quickly went off into the deep end of the Spawn
pool. What did that have to do with anything, though?
I don't know. We have been reading it. I don't know if it's going forward or what. But mm-hmm. like we're just dipping in and out. So yeah. we have no context.
Which is by the way, it's the right choice. Like, this is not the time to try to bring in new readers, and I reckon right. I don't consider that a fault of this.
And the thing was, is it featured a bunch of really talented, terrific artists, and including one whose artwork I never really get to see. So it was interesting to read. Scott Snyder wrote one of the chapters. There was four chapters. McFarlane drew the chapter Scott drew. It was really short, kind of disappointing. I was hoping he would draw more Spawn, as opposed to being very shadowy and mostly about this other character. And you know, Capullo drew a lot of it, most of it. J. Scott Campbell drew a chapter. Jason Sean Alexander, who did a heralded run on, was it Hellspawn, did a chapter.
Maybe. I think so.
And then Jerome Pena drew a bunch of stairs at the end. like a bunch of panels of staircases. But I did not hate reading it. I kind of, in a weird way, enjoyed it as sort of a look back at this book I really liked as a kid, but I was a teenager. But I didn't also enjoy it because I didn't really understand what was going on.
So I missed all of this. I was out right before it happened for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, 13 or, and I was a giant. I'm sorry. This, like, I feel like that, like, you have to categorize this to talk about a book like this. Todd McFarlane was the first artist I ever noticed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, where I went, oh, this guy. And for years I didn't like Eric Larson because he was the guy who followed McFarlane on Amazing Spider-Man.
And his style was really different.
Yeah, but to me it always felt like he was aping it because it was also, you know, wonky, you know, anatomy and sort of strange. And that was, again, that's my 12-year-old perception of it, which was not informed and not good. But, like, I sort of just stuck with that. So it took me years to be able to appreciate Eric Larson because I was like, I wanted more Todd McFarlane on there. And I read this and I definitely was like, I don't know what I'm reading. And so it made it very hard for me to form a valuable opinion on it. So I only had the craft to deal with. So I had a couple of thoughts. One, like, the style, like, it is without joy or humor or whimsy of any kind. So it's just dark, 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 dark. And I don't respond to that at all. Like, it bores me to tears. And I don't know the point of it. I know that there's people who like that, and that's their thing. And, you know, people who like death metal doesn't mean they're all depressed. Fine. But I don't connect with it at all. I was kind of excited to see some of the artists involved. You know, like, I was like, oh, Jerome Pena. And you're right. It was some stairs, and I didn't know what the story was. So it looked nice.
Well, at least it could have been an interesting drawing. Like, you know, I don't know any of these stories, but... Opinion's three pages where somebody walking upstairs, a long staircase. And it's just like, okay. Could have got anybody do you that, know, really.
And then the other, like, there's a stylistic thing to it where, like, Todd McFarlane's not a very good writer. It, like, he might have taught himself to do, but it, to me, it struck me as, like, a kid who was writing a story who thought it was great and it wasn't very good, but everyone's like, you'll get better. But Todd McFarlane's old now. He's not going to get better. This is what he is. And then finally, my other thought, like there's a thing in here where this is driving me crazy. The narration panels were telling me what was happening on the page. And I was like, why are you doing this? It's a comic book. It's the one place you don't need to add narration. Spawn.
Well, that's the old style.
I don't like it. It's like, we're better than that now. And again, it's an aesthetic that people are used to and they like, and it's what he's been doing for a billion years now, and that's fine. But then my other thing is that Todd McFarlane was my favorite thing when I found him. And I thought, this doesn't look like anything. And it is super original and is exciting and it is vibrant. And then he proceeded to do nothing other than that forever. He found Spawn and that's all that he does now. And I get it. Like, it's hard to draw him on, but he barely draws it. And when he does, it's all the same. There's no creative growth that has happened in any of this that I am aware of. That's an important clause.
I don't think he draws it at all. He inks it sometimes.
Right, yeah, I know, but
he inks,
like,
he's a regular inker on it, but he doesn't draw
right,
it.
Right, so what I'm saying is, like, he went and he did this thing that made a real impact in comic book art. I think not just, you know, for readers, but I think it influenced other people. And then he never took it anywhere. And I find that to be so disappointing. You know, it's like, he found his lane. He's like, there, I did that thing. And then he's coasting on it since then. And it's funny because for him, because I don't think it's very good, I find that disappointing. Whereas Eric Larson, and granted, I'm not reading either of these books, I feel like Eric Larson in Savage Dragon is just doing whatever the hell he wants. Because the thing is this, we've had to read for these patron picks, we've had to read like a Savage Dragon thing or something, whatever, or any of these sort of long single creator, more or less, you know, controlled things. You go back in and you go, wow, what the hell's going on in here? Like when we read Savage Dragon, like it was all of these other characters and things and all this stuff had happened and he'd been a cop and he'd done whatever. And I read Spawn and I was like, this is exactly the same as Spawn has always been. Like it was no different. It was exactly the same tone, exactly the same dialogue. I didn't feel like I had missed 300 issues. I felt like I had missed two. You know, and that nothing had changed over, what I mean, how long is this now? 20, almost 30 years?
It's been a long time. Let's not do that. Don't do that.
No, now. But what I'm saying is, like, there's been no creative growth in this at all. It's just nostalgia and momentum. And I find that so uninteresting, especially coming from somebody that had meant so much to me at such a crucial moment. If not for Todd McFarlane, would I be here talking to you and, you know, the thousands of people who come to listen to us? I don't know. And so I find that to be like, you know, it's just kind of a bummer. And that's how I felt reading it.
Yeah, I mean, if I hadn't read and liked Spawn as a 14-year-old, I would probably have a very harsh opinion on this. But, you know, since I did, so yeah, I remember being a kid and thinking the guy with the giant axe was awesome. Yeah. You know, I remember that. I wouldn't think that now. But
well, it's like the guy, it's, you know, like, kid, it's like the guy who's at the party too long. You know, like, you know, it's an extension, but, you know.
Well, yes, and I mean, yes, and no. Clearly there's an audience for this.
I know, you know? But like, but okay.
Just like there's still an audience for Venom for some godforsaken reason. There's an audience for this sort of you see, hardcore, you know.
And you see stuff. A Venom shirt in public, and it's a red flag every time.
So,
but like,
you know, that's fine.
Think of like Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused. Like, he's still there hanging. And there's always going to be a couple of the teenagers like, fuck yeah, we're hanging out with this guy. But, you know, 10 years later, is he still hanging out with those people? That's this. I think.
I don't begrudge him for that. Because there's an audience for it. And he's made him a lot of money doing it. So
and,
I mean,
and that is what he cares about. And that is not wrong, but it is not inspiring and it is not fun. And you know, like, he talks about money. He makes characters. He makes action figures that he can sell. He buys baseballs. He does whatever. Like, that's what he's interested in. You know, like, what's the big hit? What's the, you know, like, it's not art, though. It's product. I could go on. No. You know, and it's totally high-minded bullshit stuff.
I would argue that most of what we read every week is product, not art.
I know that, but the thing that gets me excited and the thing that we get excited about is when somebody takes that form, and because it is all commerce, totally, but within that there are sparks and there are bits where you go, oh, that's really cool. We've been talking about that. We were talking about how Bendis could coast doing the same thing forever, and he didn't, you know, and he does a weird book like Pearl or what was the one called with the comic book artist who becomes a spy.
That wasn't the title of it?
Yeah, the comic book artist who becomes a spy and gets beat up by Esad Ribic. It's a bad title. but like that's a risk. Like, he's like, he has to create, he has to do something. He has to draw things.
It's funny you mentioned Bendis, because he one of his things that blew him up was doing Hellspawn.
I know, and that was that was good, because he's super talented. Or somebody like Scotty, okay, take Scotty Young, for example, who is super influenced by Todd McFarlane. He could make a career drawing baby Avengers for the rest of his life. But every day I see him put up a sketch of something that he does because he loves to draw and he loves to create. Todd McFarlane doesn't do that. He never has. He found a thing that he could do and he does that thing. And I don't know if it feels like I'm being too hard on him because he's made completely valid choices, but it feels like a waste of talent to me in a certain way. But that's me being selfish.
I think what you're hearing is Josh's hero is being disappointed by your hero. Who was your hero at one point in your
life?
Maybe.
Yeah. That's possible.
That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You're Ben Seaver. Mike Seaver?
Ben.
Who was the one?
Was it
Ben?
Yeah. No. Yeah.
So there you go. No, Ben's the dad.
No, Ben was the kid.
Or was he the younger brother?
Jeremy something. Then Mike Mike was the older brother who's now
Kirk
Cameron, and then Jason Seaver was the dad. Maggie Seaver was the mom, and I don't remember the sister's name.
It wasn't Mike? No, it was Ben. Whatever.
Mikey.
You're a Seaver.
Mikey's best friend was Boner.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. If that's if you remember that reference, let us know.
It's so funny because it seems like such a big deal. I know exactly what we were talking about. Haven't thought about it in at least 30 years, and I know exactly what you meant, and it's forever ago.
Well, you can vote for to add a book to the rundown to patreon.com/iFanboy, and thanks to all who do that. Also, if you go there and join up at the $5 or higher level, you get your own dumb superpower like these fine four gentlemen that we're about to bestow. Josh, you start.
So I had a couple that I wrote down ahead of time, and they both dovetailed in a way with the name I got. And so I want to point out that this is not planned.
Sure.
But Joseph M. Irwin, I can't get it out, dances exactly like Bill Irwin or Agent Kirby from My Blue Heaven every time he hears Mambo.
Uncontrollably
until the Mambo is concluded. And no, I did not know he was going to have that name until after I wrote the thing down.
It's a great dance. By a great actor in a great movie.
It is joyful. He's completely subsumed by it. He must dance. He must Mambo.
Unselfconscious. Yep. Joy.
Dance like no one's watching. We are all watching, and we only feel his joy. And that's what happens to Joseph as well when he.
Now you don't want to be in an elevator with Joseph when someone's ringtone has Mambo music, and he just starts to start going.
I think it depends on the kind of day you're having.
Well, it's a full elevator. Uh-huh. Suddenly there's elbows and faces and knees and. Mm-hmm. Bryce Bridges, much like Mary Poppins, but not exactly like Mary Poppins. Bryce Bridges has a bag, and in that bag, he can pull out the thing that is needed the most at any given moment. But only one thing. Mm-hmm. He can't be pulling out all the stuff that Mary Poppins is pulling out, but he can pull the one thing that is needed at any given moment the most.
A bag of holding. Is that
like, for instance, if he was here, he would be like, "Hey, I got Claritin for you."
Mm-hmm.
You know, he is the one thing that's needed the most at that moment.
Is Claritin your allergen of choice?
Yes, that's my sort of daily.
The 24-hour, yeah. I use that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Claritin D's, the good stuff.
Yeah. Don't you have to get that from the pharmacy?
No, you used to have to, but now you don't, I don't think. But you have to get it from behind the counter because of the D.
Yeah, so whatever is needed, and sometimes you think you know it's needed, but his bag knows what's actually needed the most at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like you think, actually, Bryce, I could use like $1 million more than the Claritin, but the bag knows I actually need to breathe more.
Okay. Andrew Funk, and I thought of moving the Bill Irwin power to him because Funk, but I decided to stick with my initial instinct. Andrew Funk has rocket nostrils. They produce 52,000 pounds of thrust. And so if he wants to lift off, he could. You know, he's got to be careful blowing his nose.
He's got like a rocket jetpack for nose.
Yeah. It's not. It's more than a redstone.
I assume
rocket.
The cartilage of his nose can handle the thrust.
His body can handle the strain of what it puts out. He's not being burned by it or anything like that. But, you know, and you want to be careful because, you know, if you don't have the suit on, you go suborbital, you have a problem. You know.
Right. But how does he fly with the suit on?
You gotta have enormous controls.
He can't protect his breathing in space if the nose is also mm-hmm. shooting out the thrust.
Well, it isn't necessarily that he'd have to go into orbit. He could do it in sort of an intercontinental ballistic sort of way.
Or he could shut the thrust off before entering space and then mm-hmm. cover it up and use his momentum to carry it in space.
Yeah, then you could just use like a couple of little compressed air cans.
Julian Buscilla, I think that's right, or close enough, once a year, only once a year, and only for 1 hour at a time, Julian can conjure up Maximus Decimus Meridius. The problem is, every time he appears, he does the whole speech. So you've burned a good portion of the hour. And then you're like, okay, I know the speech, Maximus.
Remember?
Not for anything. Help you move, beat up a guy down the street, you know, lead your army. Well, any of the things you need him to do, but only for 1 hour. You got him for once a year.
That's nice. That's good. I think that works.
Father to a murdered son. Husband to a northern murdered wife. Commander of the armies in the north. General of the Felix Legion. And loyal servant to the true emperor Marcus Aurelius. And I will have my vengeance in this life or the next.
And you go, good to see you, Maximus.
He's just your Uber driver.
Hello, Julian. So there you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go get your own superpower. And Josh, you're the producer of this week's show, so you decide if we do this email or not.
You know what? He's just got a last. What's your favorite cookie?
Do we want to talk about it? Or we want to real quickly. Him or not?
James Reardon from the UK asked a much longer and smarter question, but the end is PS was, I want more food related chats. Best meatball recipes. I don't like meatballs. And then favorite cookies. So what's your favorite cookie, Connor?
Why don't you like meatballs?
I don't like when you add things to the hamburger because it ruins the texture tip. It makes it mushy to me. And then it doesn't have the mouthfeel of like beef or like steak or like something like that. It just makes it mushy and I don't like that.
I don't have a recipe. I've never tried to make them, but I mean, I love a good meatball.
I wish I did.
My favorite cookie.
I wish I did. They're attractive as a sort of food item. Like, you know, you throw them in the sauce and it makes the sauce good. And you know,
there's a great beef and veal meatball at the Italian place near my apartment. Favorite cookie is
like, what's your,
I mean, I'm
your cookie. Like if you were, and you can be specific because there's,
well, I mean, look, I'm a chocolate chip guy, but when I think about, like the cookie that I've loved the most over my lifetime.
That's what I'm talking about.
It's the Entenmann's chocolate chip cookie, the little ones.
Really?
Yeah.
I like, you know, like if you see like a bakery cookie, like and it's kind of big and thick and it's a little chewy, but like with the chunks in it, like the chocolate chip chunks, but peanut butter. Peanut butter chocolate chip cookie, but like with a like the size of like a big hamburger patty. Kind of thick. Like that. That's the best cookie. There was a candy store here, and they would have them, and it was a problem because they were like 600 calories a piece. And then they stopped carrying them because nobody but me was buying them. And then they went out of business. So like they don't exist anymore.
That's sad. Yep.
Let's wrap it up. If you would like, he had a much better question that we're not getting to, but I also like talking about cookies. And he said he missed food chats, so I gave you what you really asked for.
But you know what I'm talking about, the little Entenmann's cookies?
I know exactly what you're talking
that
about.
That box. Yeah. I would.
You had the.
I would destroy a whole.
You had
box
the
of
option
those.
of milk chocolate or dark chocolate in those. I think, and I would go dark. My wife would go milk. This has been a life. This has been a long marriage, long disagreement on our parts. Oh man, I love cookies. I used to be able to eat those.
Contact at ifanboy.com. That's how you can get an email on the show when we haven't run long, which we do on a regular basis.
There's a lot of books this week. I told you I couldn't tell you about the Talksplode that was supposed to be out last month. Well, I can, because last night I had a chat with Brad Meltzer, who you may remember from his run. Actually, not a lot of comics, to be honest. You know, run on Green Arrow, Identity Crisis, run on Justice League, and he did a Buffy. I did an arc of Buffy. And
he's done a bunch of, like, you know, like, anniversary issue stories, or like but not a lot of like runs.
Yeah, exactly. And I was kind of surprised. And it was over a really sort of short period of time. And now, also, he's a very successful author. You know, he's
hugely successful novelist.
Yeah, and then a very successful, you know, 19 of those books, the IM series with Chris Eliopoulos, who is our pal. And then on top of that, he's on TV shows. As himself.
He hosts TV shows.
Yeah, like suffice to say, I did not have time to talk about all of those things, but we did talk about a lot of things, and it was fun, and that will be out later this week as you listen to this, to coincide with the release of his two new books, I Am Walt Disney and I Am Marie Curie.
That's cool.
Yes, it was cool. There will be a Booksplode later this month at some point that Connor and I are going to have to A, read the book for, and B, talk about. We're doing Sleeper Book 1, the sort of first collaboration between Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, and we're going to see if it held up because we loved it a lot back then.
that's one of your, you used to say one of your all-time favorite comics. Yep. We'll find that if it still is, sure, probably towards the end of the month. It's a 400 page plus book. Mm. It's got to fit that in somewhere. So it'll be coming. You can look for that at the end of the month. So I guess when's the Talk Load going to come out?
Next week. We can talk about that off air.
Okay. We'll talk about that off air. No meetings on, no public meetings. Next week is episode 700. If you're doing the math, you realize that already. We're going to be recording it live. We're live streaming it, so you can come watch it. Everyone can come watch it. The recording is going to happen this coming Friday, September 13th at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And it goes for hours, so if you don't have to come be there right for the beginning, you can come hop in. There'll be a link on the website to where it is. I think that's how we'll do it, and so you'll be able to find that. Plus, it'll be on our social media. But you come watch us, Josh and Ryan Haupt and I, as we devolve over the course of hours reading your emails and answering them. And if you want to get your email on the show, you can send your emails by Friday, September 13th at noon Pacific with the number 700 in the subject line if you want to try to get your email on the show. But as I said last week, the earlier the better, because in the beginning we start going in order, then we start skipping.
Yep.
Because we can't go for 10 hours. So
it's too late. It's too late to give them that advice now.
Well, we've gotten very many emails, but you know, still the earlier the better. You're getting it in Monday is better than getting it in Friday.
Fair enough.
Is what I'm saying. So, if you want to get in the show, 700 in the subject line by Friday, September 13th at noon. And you know, we've had a lot of good emails. We've had some emails that we're definitely not going to answer. We've had some emails we've never been asked, questions we've never been asked before, some we've been asked before.
That's exciting.
So, you know, a wide variety. Not a lot of like wacky, goofy, silly ones. This isn't ask us anything scenario. We won't necessarily answer everything, but we can ask us anything. So if you ever wanted to ask us a question, this is your chance. So head over to iFanboy. There'll be a post for that on Friday. You can check that out there. But in the meantime, you can go there. You can find all of our podcasts, our Pick of the Week show, our special editions, our books loads, our talks loads, our movie shows, as well as, hey, all the content from 13 years of making content is all still on the website, iFanboy.com. You can go back and read all that stuff. Find out what we thought about things 12 years ago, 13 years ago. If you feel like it. I don't know why you would, but if you do. Also, to find out what the Pick of the Week is before we do the show, you can go to facebook.com/iFanboy, like us there, or follow us at iFanboy on Twitter or at iFanboy Comics on Instagram, where in addition to finding out what the pick is, we do the Best Week in Panels feature and have a jolly good time there. And individually, we are at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram and at J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram.
Not so much.
Are you still on a Twitter break?
I checked it once a week or so, but sort of not there now.
Sure, sure, sure.
It turns out when you go, no one cares. we talked about before how to support the show. Patreon, you know, really give us money. But if, you know, there's a lesser way to help. There's a thing you can do. If you like the show, you can write a review on Apple Podcasts, which is really the place where those get aggregated, and that affects the algorithm and all the blah, blah, blah. Or you can do the I like this show. You should listen to it, to people who like things like you think that you might like to. So tell others about it directly is what I'm getting at. So that doesn't mean, by the way, going into your comic shop and taking an iPhone and starting playing it on speaker without anybody asking. I don't want to intrude their lives like that. Listen, I appreciate you know your verve, your spirit, but that's not the way to go. But you can say, hey, you know what? This was a really interesting conversation. I heard about this. This guy hates Todd McFarlane now. And then they'll send me letters and it'll be a whole thing. I'm going to stop.
That's true.
This show got long. I'll be interested to see what happens. But I can't imagine that anybody who's like a McFarlane super fan would still be listening at this point and have anything to agree with me about. But maybe I'm surprised.
We'll find out, won't we?
I would love to hear, you know, like, so like, here's why I like this, you know, and I'd be like, okay, you know, that's valid. I don't understand what it would be, but maybe it exists. Mm-hmm. I understand your point of view on it. You know, like, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah. I've validated you.
Well, that's the
you.
Show. Let's end this now because we are looking at a long one next week. So until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Thanks so much, everyone.